You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Daniel Howitt's interview with the star from The Humans, Richard Jenkins.
I keep seeing these ads for that zombie show on TV. It's awful. I can't believe people want to watch that kind of stuff at night. You know, there's enough going on in the real world to give me the creeps.
Great. Thank you.
To the Blake family Thanksgiving.
To the very special Chinatown edition of the Blake family Thanksgiving.
Dad, you won't get any reception up here. You have to lean up against the window. Yeah, but no, lean in. Smush your body up. There you go.
So, are you balancing a job with all your studies?
The main reason I'm not done with school yet is because I was depressed for a bit. I'm fine now.
In our family, we don't have that kind of depression.
Dad. Whoa, come back to earth.
Sorry.
No, we just have a lot of stoic sadness.
Can't you hire someone to...
Cost $100 a night to hire someone to make sure she doesn't fall
and get hurt.
No, she needs to think before she opens her mouth.
Don't you think it should cost less to be alive?
Absolutely.
There's this comic book I was obsessed with as a kid. It's about this species of half-alien, half-demon creatures and the scary stories that they tell each other.
Oh, my!
Are all about us, humans.
I know you think there's something wrong with me. It's not a news.
She still acts like a martyr when I'm trying to apologize.
You'll find someone new. You're gonna come out of this stronger. I promise.
Stop lying to me. Just stop. Don't actually stop.
Everything I say makes her.
Yeah. Who should she remind you of?
You.
Me.
You.
It's you, my friend.
I love that in times like this, I have a home base, a family I can always come home to.
To knowing that this is what matters, right here. Because everything anyone's got, no matter who you are, everything you have goes.
Well, that's a positive way of looking at things.
Wow.
Do that at a funeral, Dad.
Hey, Richard, thanks so much for chatting with me today about The Humans.
My pleasure, Daniel. My pleasure.
The apartment in The Humans is such a specific place in the story. So just to kick things off, have you ever lived in a crappy old apartment like the one in The Humans?
Sure. I'm an actor, for crying out loud. Yes.
Was that a nostalgic experience to get into a set like that?
No, I think of roaches when we were asleep. We had a hide a bed, so we had my wife. Her back was to me, and I looked over, and there was a big roach on her shoulder. And I went and I like and I flicked him away. I didn't tell her about it for about a month.
Wow. Well, there are lots of scary moments, much like the roach, throughout The Humans. But your character, Eric, his experience throughout the film is very interior, almost no explosions of emotions or anything like that. So I'd love to hear you just describe your character. How do you view the man that you portrayed?
Well, I just always felt that it was my fault, what had happened to me. And it is his fault. And, you know, to be that age and be on the edge of losing everything is a terrifying. And, you know, they put on a brave face. He has a job. He's a guy who works at Walmart or whatever. I always thought it's amazing that he's as engaged as he is through the movie, you know, because he's got a burden that he put on himself. And he talks about it a little bit. He in the pig section where we go around the table, he just says, you know, that I want to thank this family for the unconditional love and support, which he's talking about Deirdre, his wife, who has forgiven him, but has she? I mean, really? So it's just, he's got a lot on his mind. And I would always ask myself, what are you thinking? What is he thinking about here? Is he really going upstairs to check the score of the game? Is he, when the phone rings at the end, who is that? Who's calling him? There's a lot of mysteries that are really fun for an actor, because you answer those mysteries yourself. You don't tell anybody, but you know what's going on. And Stephen gave us that leeway, that, you know, that was our decision. That was my decision of what I was thinking about. He never said, this is what he's thinking about here. This is what it, you know, because that's just, you can't. But I was always kind of impressed in the fact of how engaged he was. Hmm.
Well, could you dive in a little bit more about the preparation you took to play this character? That's interesting that Stephen didn't fill your head with all the things that your character should be thinking, considering how interior the character really is. Could you dive into a little bit more about your preparation?
I try not to make decisions as I go. I try to hold off as long as I can. And sometimes I don't make them, they make themselves. And you just have to stay open to what's happening around you and the information that you have from the text. And that informs you of who you are, what you've been, what you've tried. And so it's not, if I told you, it's not carefully crafted by anyone, because that for me is just a fool's errand. I can't. I mean, other people probably can, and I just can't do that. So you just kind of show up, take everything in, hear what's going on, understand where you are, and kind of see what happens. I was kind of interested to know what was going to happen myself. We had 8 days of rehearsal. I think we had two or three days on this set, which was really helpful. That's where it kind of all, you know, just made sense to me. Once we had a space and where we were and we were talking, but you know, it felt very comfortable. Felt like a family. We all were friends. We all liked each other. We spent a lot of time laughing. You know, it was a great working environment. It was such fun. We shot it in 28 days, something like that. Stephen didn't want to shoot it like a, you know, master two shot over the shoulder close up. It just didn't want to do that, you know. So it was a new experience. It was like doing a play. I mean, I was in the theater for 15 years, and I haven't been on stage in a long time. So it was a little scary, but so really a lot of fun.
That's great. With this being Stephen's first foray into directing film, how do you feel like he had a unique perspective being the playwright who transitioned into directing the feature?
Well, I think that he's been thinking about this for a while. He always saw a movie in this play. I don't know if he always did, but there came a time when he just saw there was a film here. And because I think what he wanted to emphasize things that he wanted to emphasize on the stage but couldn't. And there are things on the stage that he did that he couldn't do in a movie. And they each have their own advantages. And he wanted that apartment to be, I think, more of a character in the sense that, and the apartment was a huge character in the play. I mean, it was, you know, like a doll's house. It was brilliant. But he wanted you to see the paint. He understood how to use the camera. I mean, the camera, you look where the camera tells you to look. And he was always aware of that and where he wanted the focus of the movie to be while people were talking, while they weren't talking. Maybe it's on them. Maybe it's on their foot. Maybe it's on the back of their shoulder. Maybe it's on a water stain on that somebody's looking at. It was always something that he thought a lot more about than any of us had. So we trusted it from the minute he started, that because he had a vision and he wanted, this is the film he wanted to make. So that was nice. That was really, that was cool.
Had you seen the stage production before you did this?
I always meant to. I never got around to doing it. My agent kept saying to me, you've got to see this. It's incredible. You have to see it. And I didn't, never got a chance. I would love to see it.
Gotcha.
I will. Somewhere.
Sure. Is that something that you think would be uncomfortable for you now, having performed in it? Would it be strange to see them on stage?
No. They're really different animals. I mean, it is the same piece and it's about the same things, but I would love to see it.
That's great. Well, you talked a little bit about the family dynamic that you all were able to develop as an ensemble. How did you work and bond and develop that lived in feeling amongst you?
I don't know. I don't, we all liked each other. I know that's a big help. And we spent 8 days together before we started, which was always helpful. And sometimes rehearsals for movies are pointless. Excuse me. It was Martin Scorsese, but I put him on. Oh.
Perfect. I appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Come on, Martin. You knew I was doing this right now. Why would you call?
You're talking to Daniel Howe right now. Come on. Come on.
And what was I talking before Marty interrupted?
Yeah, I was just curious about you guys developing a great familial bond. You said you spent days together.
You know, we liked each other. We really liked each other. You know, they're just really great people. They're all great people. Jane Howdy Shell is a Midwesterner like I am, and so we talked about that. Amy is hilarious, and Beanie is just as sweet as she seems, and Stephen Ewan is this incredibly funny, talented dude, and June Squibb is, she's June Squibb. She's the great June Squibb. So it was a bunch of people who had fun together. And when I saw it, I kept thinking, God, we look like a family. We look like a family. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. But I don't know how. I've said this before. I think it starts with Stephen Caron, who sets the tone, and it was all very low key in rehearsals and letting us kind of find our way. And, Jane had done 600 performances of this. And so I felt like I was kind of had to catch up here. I had a lot, but she's so good. And every time she did it, it was like she had never done it before. And she was really generous to me and very helpful and sweet. And, that made it a lot easier for me, as easy as it could be because of her. She was just there for me. She was great.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo. And for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think your perspective as a Midwesterner, do you think that brought any unique perspective to your character?
I think it brings perspective to everything I do. It's even when I don't want it to. It's who you are, and your experience is part of who you are as an actor. And sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it isn't. But and you have to sometimes fight it. But I think I mean, you read it and you say, I think I understand this man. And you're not sure because you haven't really done it yet. But you, for me, it's just you read it and you go, yeah, I'd like to do this. And that's about as simple and that's about as specific as it gets. You know, it's just I see something there that interests me and I think I can bring something to it. And then sometimes you read it and you go, there's a lot of other people that could do this. I don't see myself in this yet. So, but it's the writing. You just, that's the thing about it. The writing is so good and so seemingly ordinary and yet profound. And how you do that is a gift and that is rare. He's got it. And I don't know how you do it, but he does it over and over again in this play, in this movie.
The sound design of this film is massively important. The stomping upstairs, the trash compactor, it's so important to the experiences of the character. In what ways was this replicated or utilized on set, and how did that help your performance?
Well, sound effects were big because, they startled us. I was startled, I think, a lot in the movie. And a couple of times it was this. Okay, I'm going to do that in this video. And then other times you really had a big sound. But it was never as massive and as important as it was in the final cut. You know, so that was a lot that was added.
What was the most challenging day that you remember from The Humans?
The first day of rehearsal for me was just, I was pretty... I'm always terrified. And you realize it's daunting. You don't have a lot of time for this. And I wish I had more time. And I wish I would, because I spent 2-3 months before I started rehearsal on the script. And once I got in the room with everybody else, it was like I never looked at it. It was daunting. And I think it may have been. The shoot was really fun. It was, you look forward to it every day. It was fun. It was exciting. It was like Thanksgiving every day. maybe the last day, because it was, you kind of hated to leave. You hated to say goodbye and finish it up. But there is something, you feel like you've finished something. That's always a nice feeling. But at the same time, I hated leaving everybody and not seeing them. But the shoot itself was pretty joyful.
That's great. The experience of Thanksgiving for the characters, though, is mostly not joyful. Have you experienced this dichotomy where holidays, which are supposed to be the happy time, often bring up these challenging emotions? Is that something you've experienced? And why do you think that is?
Well, because you put everybody in the same room. The holidays is, okay, everybody who, whether you like each other or not, you're going to come spend the day together. And you're asking for it. But I've been lucky, knock on wood, that my family, I don't think Thanksgivings or these things are ever what you think they are. If they say, I think someone's said to me, oh my God, my Thanksgiving's never like that. I said, well, I bet you, if they filmed it and showed it to you, you would be surprised. Because people say to me about this, you're so mean to her. And I'm thinking, I don't remember being that mean, which is kind of like in life, you finish dinner or something, somebody say, why were you arguing about that? I say, I was arguing? I didn't, it's pretty typical. I mean, yeah. A lot has happened to this family in a short time, but nothing that doesn't happen to, maybe not all of it, some of it, to some families, health and money and relationship issues. And, these are things that are human and it's not like, one of the family members was taken to a spaceship and probed, these are things that happen to all of us. And I think it's typical in many ways. And that's what I loved about it. It was not, it didn't seem extraordinary. It just seemed that these people are dealing with a lot of things that most people are dealing with. And I think money is a, you know, I mean, some families, many families, you know, go through every day of their lives worrying about money and how am I going to pay for this? And that's just a horrible way to live. You know, it's tough. It's really hard. And daughter might lose her job because of her health, and the other daughter can't get the grants, and you know, she's been struggling with her career, and I lost my job because of something I did. We couldn't help the, if you're not able to help your children, you know, that's a scary thing too. And so they're all close to going over the precipice here. So I don't even know what question I'm answering now, Daniel.
No, that was great. That was great.
I think it had to do with the humans, though. I think that's...
It did. Okay. It did. But The Humans isn't your only movie coming out this year. Oh. We are also very excited for Nightmare Alley, reuniting with Guillermo. What are you most excited for people to see with Nightmare Alley?
I just saw it the other night. And I just wanted to go see it because it's Guillermo, man. You're just in that world. He creates a world like nobody else. It's just like nobody else. You know, it is, he's like this master out of the late 40s, but he's totally himself. There's nobody else like him. You see this movie and you go, oh, Guillermo del Toro. And it's really cool. It's just really cool. Yeah, I mean, it's just to be in something like it, you know, just to be in it. It's, you go, oh God, I'm in this movie. This is such a great, it's really the world he creates. The carnival is so cool. And I loved it.
Awesome.
We'll have to wait.
Yes, a little longer for that one. Well, Richard, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. I really love your work in The Humans, and I'm excited to see Nightmare Alley as well.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Daniel Howitt's interview with the star from The Humans, Richard Jenkins, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. The Humans is currently playing in limited release and streaming on Showtime. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and we are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.